to the Black Guy Who Tips podcast. I listen because Rod and Karen are hot.
As best they could, the people brought the old country with them. A taste for hominy grits and pole beans cooking in salt pork. The sure enoughs and the I reckons and the superstitions of new moons and itchy palms that had seeped into their very being. In the new world, they surrounded themselves with people they knew from the next farm over or their daily vacation Bible school, from their clapboard holiness churches, from the colored high schools or the corner store back home, and they would keep those ties for as long as they lived. The ones from the country fired their shotguns into the night air on New Year's Eve like they did back home in Georgia and Mississippi and ate black-eyed peas and rice for good luck on New Year's Day. The people from Texas took Juneteenth Day to Los Angeles, Oakland, Seattle, and other places they went. Even now, with barbecues and red soda pop, they celebrate June 19th, 1865, the day Union soldiers rode into Galveston, announced that the Civil War was over, and released the 250,000 slaves in Texas who, not knowing they had been freed, had toiled for 2.5 years after the Emancipation Proclamation. Whole churches and social rituals in the North and West would be built around certain southern towns or entire states well into the 1990s. At the Bridge Street Church in Brooklyn, for instance, when people from South Carolina were asked to stand and make themselves known, half the flock would rise to his feet. To this day, people still wear sequins and bow ties to their annual Charleston Ball in Washington, where a good portion of the Carolinas went. It turned out they were not so different from the Sicilians settling in Little Italy or Swedes in Minnesota. In the New World, colonies organized themselves into Mississippi and Arkansas clubs, in Chicago, Florida clubs, in Harlem, Carolina clubs, in Brooklyn and Philadelphia, and numerous Texas clubs, General Louisiana clubs, several New Orleans clubs, and among others, a Monroe, Louisiana club, and a Lake Charles, Louisiana club in Los Angeles. They met over oxtails and collard greens well into the turn of the new century, or for as long as the original migrants lived to recall among their dwindling membership the things they left behind, the ailing parents and the scuffling siblings, and sometimes even their own children. The courtly tipping of one's hat to a stranger, the screech owls and the whippoorwills wailing outside their windows foretelling an imminent death, paper shell pecans falling to the ground, mimosa trees, locust dogs, dogwood trees, and china berries, the one-room churches where the people fanned themselves through the parching revivals and knelt by the ancestors buried beside the sanctuary light. Hey, welcome to the Black Guy Who Tips podcast. I'm your host, Rod, as always joined by my co-host,
Karen,
whenever the computer is working, okay?
Come on.
You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Podomatic, search the Black Guy Who Tips, leave us 5-star reviews. The official weapon of the show is
a taser,
and the unofficial sport,
a bullet ball
extreme. And yes, I see your camera is acting up over there. So, if you need to switch back and forth from browser stuff, I understand. You don't have to text me. I got you.
What's the idea? Hold on.
it just looks a little blurry, you know.
Okay.
In right. That other browser, it's not as clear.
Right. Yeah.
At any rate, that excerpt was from The Warmth of Other Suns. A great book, Isabel Wilkerson. And that made me, I brought up that chapter specifically because it mentions Juneteenth. And most importantly, like, people keep saying stuff where, like, well, Juneteenth started in Texas and now everybody's celebrating it, but make sure y'all mention Texas and stuff. You know, no one's trying to erase that, or at least I haven't seen that. But I think also people like to flex their knowledge on, I knew this thing before y'all, or I just learned this thing, and I don't, you try to erase it or whatever, because now it's becoming like a national holiday for a lot of companies, a lot of people, you know, all this stuff. And national means, hey, there's gonna be white people that get this day off and shit too.
Yeah, I know people offended. I don't care. We gonna do like we do for all the fucking holidays. We get a lot of holidays off we don't give a fuck about, but our job pays us, we have cookouts, we have barbecues, we have a good time. It's mattress sales, it's car sales. I am content with that. That's when you know this holiday is official. When it comes around, everybody like, oh my god, not another car sale, mattress sale too. Yes, I want to be like President's Day, Memorial Day, July 4th, the rest of the holidays. I don't care who gets off work, like, that's irrelevant to me. My thing is, if you celebrate it, you celebrate it. You don't, you don't. And it's one of those things where people get so tied up into other bullshit that don't matter when it comes to shit like this.
Yeah, I didn't care either. And it is kind of funny because I saw people floating around the idea of like only black people with black ancestry and shit. I'm like, who gets to pick that? You know, what about light skinned people that people might feel they pass? Like, does JL Covan get any of the time off? I don't know. You know, so like, it's just like, just stop trying to turn everything into a motherfucking like the race war. This is a race holiday, but it's our shit. And the same way that if you took off a Hanukkah, you got off for Hanukkah, right, they don't just come to the office and be like, Jewish people, we gonna pay you. Maybe some offices do that, but most offices go, everybody, you either get out the day off or you don't for a holiday, period.
Do whatever you gonna do, we're gonna do on that holiday. If you was gonna, right, do nothing, you gonna sleep, you gonna celebrate,
right,
barbecue, cookout, you know, go to the beach, do whatever you was going to do. I think when it comes to a lot of this stuff, because we're in the age of social media, everybody is the wokey woke, so everything got to be woke, and it just can't be what it is, a day off for people to celebrate this.
Right. So, at any rate, that what I loved about that was how the celebration of Juneteenth, the celebration of the culture is, even when people migrated from the South, they carry these traditions with them, whether it be the food, whether it be, you know, longing for home. And so now you recreate church in a way that you had it down South. All of this stuff, you know, like I said, this is a great book, for people that want to be reminded in these, times of, you know, constant turmoil and stuff online where people are always fighting and fussing and breaking black people down into these subgroups and all this shit.
Yep.
That, you know, we're all connected in these ways, and we all do have a need and a longing for each other for the most part. You know, I'm sure there's some exceptions. I'm not trying to concentrate on those, but just in general, you know, there's no reason to shit on people, black people, because they were born in a different place than you, because at the end of the day, they, you know, that their struggle is still a struggle, and the struggle should unify us, not divide us.
Right. And it's also one of the things too, to where I was listening to what you were saying about how some of the traditions kind of died as those people died, because, right, their children were not born in these areas. And, right, a lot of people stopped the tradition of, I'm going to send my children down South for the summer with their grandma, down South for the summer with their family, so that they could be around their cousins and relatives from the South. Mm-hmm. That tradition somewhere along the line was broke. So since that tradition was broke, you have a lot of people up North where it's, you know, generations that never have been down South in their lives. Right. And the same thing, a lot of people down South would actually send family up North, so hey, you can get to know your family up North, and that tradition is broken too. And so it's one of those things to where we don't have that connection. So that's why you have almost like these subsections in, I live in this part of the country, I live in that part of the country, them niggas over there don't know nothing, or the niggas over there are dumb, or whatever myth you've made up in your head. Because at the end of the day, we all deal with the same oppression. Oppression is oppression, racism is racism. It might come in different forms and fashions and shapes, but it's all the same. The end result is they don't like you, nigger. That no matter how it's presented, that's the end result. And I know for me, some of these traditions, because my aunt raised me, I see some of these traditions. They, for people that have been raised in the church, a lot of people do like homecoming for churches. And a lot of churches all across the country, particularly like AME Zion and a lot of black churches, have it where some do a week, some do a day. A lot of them do them, sometimes they do revival, sometimes they're separate, where they have people literally from all over the country go back to their home traditional church where their grandma, their great grandma may have been raised, and they all go there and they, you know, raise money for the church. I know my mama does that. Down in Waysboro, that's where my family is from, Waysboro, North Carolina, and that's what they do. They raise money for the church. And my grandpa, my great grandpa, all are buried there. And so my mama would actually go and she would clean the graves and things like that, because I think these are small country churches, so they don't have people doing like keeping the grounds and all that shit. So my mom would go there, she would like do the pebbles and clean it and do all that type of stuff, you know, to their graves and things like that. And that's a tradition, you know, that's something that she has done since my mama passed. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's one of those things where I am glad that I got to live to see some of those traditions, because a lot of people born, they, you know, a lot of their family members died prior to them being born or while they were small, so they may have been introduced to it, but they may not have been old enough to remember the tradition. So I'm glad that I am actually of the age where I ate the food and lived the experiences and things like that. So, you know, when push come to shove, if Layla asks me, I can share, you know, the traditions and the, which I have over the years, tradition, the things that I've learned from firsthand experience versus a hearsay.
I think also a lot of this stuff comes down to people not having connections or losing connections. And one of the things I enjoyed about last night, and we were participants in Drunk Black History with Brandon Collins and Gordon Baker Brown, and being involved in that and talking about Juneteenth and having, you know, Ray Sani, Chris Lambert, Shalewa Sharp, Swatches and Boomboxes present at this time, like with us, is we're all different places in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way, the pandemic took away so much, but it's kind of given too, because through the online platforms and stuff, if you want it, now I'm not saying everybody wants it, but if you want it, there's a unity that can, and a coming together that's possible in a way that wasn't before, because people have time.
Correct.
The odds of getting all those comedians some in the same place from all over the country in one place without costing a bunch of fucking money,
come on,
is crazy. Like, that would never happen right now, because, you know, unless you got a huge budget where you're gonna fly in people and all this stuff, that couldn't happen. They couldn't do that same show, but it was fun. It was fans there, it was interactive, you know, nice, like, drinking and good times and stuff. And then we turned around that same night and we went and hung out in Tea with Queen and Jay's Juneteenth celebration Zoom, and it was so fun, and there was people from all over.
Yes,
and there was like people of every,
I had a ball.
Mm-hmm. There were black people of every type up in there. I'm sure white people too. I wasn't counting.
Mm-mm.
You know what I mean? So like I wasn't up in there like, oh, like, it wasn't like that. It was so many people in there. It was so fun. It was such good vibes. It was you know, so funny. The music was dope. I, you know, made sure to put something in on the DJ, because mm-hmm. I was like, she's killing this shit.
What? She did a hell of a job.
She was killing it. And everybody was chair dancing and house dancing and everything. And it was also beautiful because I saw our fans in different ones, and some crossed over and went to both. Some just,
yeah,
you know, went to one. And all that shit was dope. It was just beautiful black love and black joy. And that's really what I think of when I think of us podcasting, and what I want our show to be.
Mm-hmm.
Is something like that. You know, I don't, you know, I know it can't be possible all the time. There's ups and downs. There's mm-hmm. people that get you mad. There's people, but at its height, at its best, I like to think of, like, that's the celebration. And I hope that stuff like that is here to stay for people. And I hope it keeps growing, because, you know, I know T with Queen J was doing a Juneteenth celebration in New York for years at this point, you know. So this is spreading. This is the point of doing it, you know. And some people are gonna have misgivings, because it just depends on how people approach stuff. Some people approach shit with, this is mine and I don't want anyone else involved in it. And to me, I just don't believe that of black culture. I know there's arguments for that, and I recognize them and I honor those, but mm-hmm. my personal belief is I don't want my culture like that. I think our culture is the most beautiful thing about us. I think it's the most powerful thing about us, and I think it infects people. I think it's so strong, it's so universal, that if you show a kid who doesn't even speak English hip-hop, they will, that will sprout a seed in them, and a hip hop culture will grow there. Yes. That's how fucking strong our shit is. So
they'll learn English through hip hop.
Yeah. So I feel like that is the beauty to me. You know, is, you know, when you see, some European basketball player come over here and he's got like cornrows and raps and shit already, and you're just like, blackness is so fucking strong, you know. So I try to stay out of the resentment of that and just look at the positives of it, and at the end of the day it's still ours, because can't nobody else make it and can't nobody else do it like us, the originator. So it was still like such a dope moment to just, you know, celebrate. So yep, great times. Yeah, you know, I had to take a nap after I woke up today because I did tie one on.
We had a lot going on, and shout out to the DJ over at the other show too.
I mean, it was just great events. Both both events were dope. Glad we could participate in both events. Glad to be thought of, you know.
Right.
So just thank you to everybody.
Celebration. Thank you.
And thank you to our fans who came out for both.
Yes, thank you. Y'all showed up and showed out. Thank you.
Right. That was, it's so, like, to know that we have fans that can go places and not be assholes, not disrupt the vibe and whatever, just fit right in. We have such polite, dope ass fans.
Yes.
And I love that about us. All right, let's get into this feedback show. We don't have that much time. I'm gonna try, but you guys know we get wordy. People gave money.
I dedicate this song to recession, depression, and unemployment. This song's for you.
Today's a new day.
New day, new pay. David from Brooklyn with the recurring donation. Thank you very much. Black Film Press Comics, we appreciate you. Ricky A, Pretty Ricky, what they call him. Thank you. Joanna M. We got a one-time donation from Rebecca M. Thank you very much, Rebecca. We got a recurring donation from Laura F. Triangle Wine Co. Thank you.
Thank you.
Kalfani G, appreciate you. Chris from Hawaii, thanks. Corey Deticula, appreciate you. Saw you out there getting it on the bike, I believe, on Facebook. I thought that was you. Tabitha M, thank you. Brianna F, appreciate you. April G, thank you. Got a one-time donation from, what's her name? Diandra. Diandra. Thank you very much, Diandra. We appreciate you. Let's see who else we got here. Got a one-time donation from Cam J, who says, I wanted to make my donation $1.69, but I realized how childish that was. Well, thank you. We appreciate it. We take childish donations too, to be honest.
Come on.
Same shout out for either one.
Come on. We don't matter if it folds or jingles. We'll take it.
Alexis H, thank you. Wonga from Down Under. We was talking about him last night on the Nerd Off. Tanya S, thank you very much, Tanya. Dana W, Samuel HJ, Virginia G, Rebecca M, Jesse J, Hannah L, and that's everybody. Thank you so much, everybody, for putting in on this. We really do appreciate it.
We do.
Holy Ghost power fell from heaven like a shower.
Now I know we've been hurt, y'all, but still
I smile.
Come on.
Even though it hurts me, I smile.
Y'all feel that?
I know God is working, so I smile. Even though I've been here for a while,
still
I smile.
Hallelujah.
Smile. It's so hard to look up when you look down. I sure would hate to see you give up now.
Cause people,
you look so much better when you smile.
Let's go.
All right, let's get into the 5-star reviews. We got one, okay? One 5-star review this week, and it's short. Where would I be without TBGWT? 5 stars by Jairus Rhymes with Paris. Jairus Rhymes with Paris. And this is from Hong Kong.
Wow.
Yeah, so we didn't get a lot of reviews. Oh, we got one. But the one we got is from all the way across the world. I love it.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Origato? Is that it? Is that thank you?
You know I don't know.
Origato? I think that's right. Because I think konnichiwa is goodbye.
Okay.
So I think origato is thank you. Nowhere. So where would I be without TBGWT? Nowhere. That's where. Best pod in the business. Thank you, Karen and Rod, especially for the podcast the last 2 to 3 weeks. Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate you listening. Appreciate you spreading the word. Appreciate you putting 5 on it.
Ow.
We need them 5-star reviews, okay? Make us look good. People check us out. People be like, what is this show popping on? What is it talking about? Maybe it's got a lot of listeners or just some cool-ass listeners that's willing to leave 5-star reviews. That's what's up. Also, I'd like to take this moment before we get into these episodes to just say thank you to all the people that are premium. Okay?
Yes, sir.
This is not an altar call. This is not begging anybody to sign up or whatever. Do you, you know, I know in these uncertain times, blah, blah, blah. But thank you. Okay? Right. Because without y'all, we wouldn't have the leverage and the positionality to say yes and no to things and to have some of these opportunities that come our way. That's all y'all, you know.
Ain't it though? 100% them.
Yeah, if it wasn't for those people that can sit, because like when people go premium, that's a consistent like bill, and like that is revenue that goes into our business. That's how we pay ourselves, all this stuff. So, and that is mostly Black people that do that. But just anyone that takes the time out to do that, like that's where we get our confidence from. That's where we get our ability to kind of like have our own voices and all that stuff. Thank you so much. You know, like no matter what, I know we're going to always be okay if we, as long as we have those people, that hardcore,
right,
small like group of fans that listens and really supports. And some of them don't even listen. They just support. They just want to put something in on it just to make sure that we safe and can do what we do for a living, right, and be here for them and for other people and stuff. And I just want to say thank you so much. If you want to sign up to become premium, you can go to theblackouttips.com/premium. Is right down the front page, the top of the page, to sign up. And people are still signing up even in the midst of the pandemic and stuff. It could just be that people are so at home. Some people are like, I need more podcasts.
Yeah, I don't went through everything,
right? It could be that, because I know it'd be weeks where I'd be like, did I listen to every podcast in the world? Where's the new podcast? And it could just be that, you know, specifically they like what we do and they like, I want more of this. Like, these other podcasts is making me depressed. These other podcasts is, you know, it's so silly. They acting like everything's fine or whatever. And maybe that's why people are doing it. I don't know. Maybe for Juneteenth and for people wanting to support Black businesses, people are doing it because we, you know, we are a Black business. But for whatever reasons you have that make you want to go premium, thank you. And you know, I've been helping people through customer service and stuff. You know, they email me theblackouttips@gmail.com and like, hey, how I get the RSS feed on my phone.
Yes, and y'all please do email. Yeah. That's the best way. I know sometimes people like to hit us up on social media, but
email theblackouttips@gmail.com. Yeah. And that's what everybody has been doing for a while now. I haven't had anybody to hit me up on social media,
but I know we have new people coming, so I'm just letting them know that this is the best way to contact us. And I know for me it means the world. I feel blessed and honored that you guys love us and want to continue to support us. Like, we are able to do the things that we can do because of you. I know we joke about how y'all keep the boat afloat, but that's a true statement.
So thank you. And yeah, I walked somebody through customer service this week. They was like, I explain this to me like I'm a 5-year-old, and I'm like, you know what, I will, let's do it. And you know, I'll tell you what, I've seen the tweets, I've seen the screenshots. You don't have to worry about me flexing on you as a Black business owner, okay? I seen what some of these people is doing out here. I promise I'm not, it's not like that. So
right,
sometimes I feel like people are scared.
Right, that's what I'm about to say. Sometimes I think people are frightened because they're like, we don't want to, but
like they write me like,
job.
Yeah, like they'll write me like, oh, I'm so sorry, I couldn't figure it out. I'm like, no, that's not how this works. You know, like, let's, like, as long as they're not mean to me or nothing, and no one ever has been, like, let's work it out. Like, I want you to have all the goodness of a premium membership that everyone else has. So all right, now we can get into it. All right, comments on the episodes. We had 2121, write a check on your Black friend to your Black friends. That was a feedback episode. Brooklyn Shoe Babe says, I vaguely remember the heroin addict as I was born in 1972. Many of the Vietnam vets that returned to my Brooklyn neighborhood were addicted. I would hear my grandmother and her best friend, or my mom and her brother and sister, talk about former classmates and friends being strung out. When the anti-drug cops started coming to my school in 82, they weren't talking about crack. They were talking about heroin, weed, acid, and pills, downers and uppers. They showed us pictures of collapsed noses and infected arms from addicts searching for veins. I remember advertisements that warned New Yorkers to not wear their gold jewelry on the train during the summer, or to tuck in chains, because the chain snatchers was a big crime and those chain snatchers were usually addicts. Yeah, I remember those pictures too, not of the drug addicts, but that was like part of education for kids in sex ed and in the driver's class down south, at least, where it was always like, and now there's one special class where we show you everything that can go wrong.
Horrific. So mangled bodies.
Yeah, here is herpes close up, okay, all over their face and they dick, okay,
right? You'd be like, oh my god, what is happening here?
I'm like, when we got in sex ed, this is not the way I wanted to see anybody's organs, okay? When y'all put, you know, we're gonna be looking at vaginas on the cover, I thought of something totally different. Like, I didn't want the first dick I ever saw to be syphilis infected,
come
know?
On
but yeah, so I can imagine that too, with DARE and all that stuff, them trying that shock value to scare you out of drugs. Like,
that
look
only
at this.
Worked for so far.
Right. Just drugs is good to people.
And show is sex.
By 1984, when NYC started, yeah, that's what I kept thinking. Was like, how good must sex be that you willing to risk bubbles all over your dick? It must be the shit. Oh my god, I gotta get some of the sex. By 1984, when NYC started tackling the AIDS epidemic, it was all about the needle exchange programs and condom use. There were PSAs about cleansing needles with bleach and not sharing needles to prevent the spread of AIDS, but by the time I started high school in 1986, crack was king. Okay, one more comment, this time regarding men and period products. I think women pass on period shame to their daughters and in their lives. If not women, just society in general. Why is a special school assembly about periods only for girls? From the beginning, boys are taught the period info aren't for them, and they just absorb societal myths and misogyny about it. I remember the message I got earlier, often as a teen, was to hide that you had your period. Powders to hide the smell, pantyhose under the pants to make sure no one could tell you were wearing a pad, etc. I remember my period started once while I was having sex with my boyfriend, the man I went on to marry. I was 19 and mortified because he popped up to tell me I didn't have any pads, so he went to the store with me. He couldn't understand my embarrassment. He explained that it didn't bother him because he grew up with a mom and three sisters. I think because of this experience of always being the gender minority in his home, it makes it easier for daughters to tell him they needed pads. You're right, it's just a societal hang up, and I think it just gets pushed into, like, it gets pushed on the boys to ridicule it and to laugh at it and admonish it and shame people for it, which is stupid.
And you know what? And then they get old and be like, your right to an abortion. You're like, motherfucker, because you're stupid.
Mm-hmm. And then I think for women and girls, they get shamed into, like, why do you have this? And it's like,
my fucking body does this. It's not like I can control this, bitch. Do you know how many people would cut the water faucet off if they could? But it don't work like that.
Yeah, it's all ridiculous. Goldilocks writes in, how do I send in funny videos / articles for the podcast segment? I mean, people email and sometimes send us something on social media. Most of the time I don't reply to those, and you know, it's always funny because, like, I'd say over half the time it's somebody sending me some shit we already covered, and they're behind on the show.
Right, I guess, they're weeks behind.
I'm not gonna say weeks, but they'll send something like, hey, look at this sword story. And I'm like, well, we covered that today, but I just don't tell them, I just don't reply back to them. Well, that means when they listen to the show tomorrow, when they get caught up, they'll have a nice little surprise. And for them, I'm giving them a gift because they feel like they found that story for us. Like, oh, look, I'm like, but you know, I'm already have a Google alert for swords. You know, I'm already looking out for the white people coming to the cookout. You know,
he does, y'all. He be on it. Most, you know, it's rarity, but most of the time, most of the stuff y'all seeing, he already probably has queued it up somewhere.
Right. But I don't mind, you know. We don't. Long as you don't like harass me or it's just one person sending me 27 articles or some shit, then I probably will mute or whatever. But, and I have had to mute some people, well-meaning people that just, that every day they were just sending me some shit. I'm like, I don't want to see this. This is, you're turning my social media into work all the time and I don't like that. So
yeah, we don't mind you posting, but it don't mean we have to see it.
Right. So it just depends on the situation. But yeah, you can email us, you can tag us on Twitter or whatever or something, you know. I've had people I had to tell somebody the other day to stop tagging me on stuff on Facebook, and I you know, obviously all respectful, no disrespect. They weren't being disrespectful. It was no shade, no argument, nothing like that. But it was like, you know, I don't like logging into my, I try to have as little Facebook notifications as possible, so I don't like logging into my Facebook, and it's like, you just got tagged to 6 articles, and there's not even something to say. It's just like, you know, my name, and I'm just like, I don't want this, so. Mm-hmm. You know, it's all about managing those stimuli.
Mm-hmm. The same. And just to let y'all know, I don't be joining nobody groups either. I know sometimes people like to send them groups. I ignore the hell out of them. And it's not a rejection or anything. I just decline everybody. I don't know if it's send it to you, but it's nothing personal. I don't like groups.
The poll was white guilt dollars. Yes, get them while they're good. Getting is good. No, I'm good, or I'm white. Okay, Karen.
I'm good.
Okay. No, I'm good. Karen doesn't want the white guilt dollars. I'm gonna go with yes, get them while the getting is good. Get them guilt dollars. Okay. Don't let your pride make you go hungry. Mm-mm. They giving it up. It's gonna be a long parched season after this. Okay.
It will be. Okay, I changed my mind. I take your wild
give. Give me these opportunities. Okay. We're looking to highlight black voices. Run it. Run the money. Run the money. Let's talk.
You can use mine.
But yeah, 96% say yes, get them while the getting is good. 4% say no, I'm good, and 0% say I'm white. So we got no whites in this poll. Brooklyn Shoe Babe says, as long as I'm not selling my soul or my children's souls, well, obviously that wouldn't be white guilt dollars.
Mm-mm.
Okay, so we're
not talking. They're the one feeling guilty, not us.
Yeah, we're not talking about, that's black guilt dollars. You feel guilty as a black person taking that money. That's some Jason Whitlock shit. I'm talking white guilt dollars, like, Brooklyn Shoe Babe, we need black librarians to be the face of this campaign. We're gonna pay you $1,000. It's like, oh yeah, I've been doing this unrecognized and now I'm getting my money. Yes. Feel bad and give me my money. As long as I'm not selling my soul or my children's souls, literally or figuratively, give me the free money. I want a discount for being black every time I go into Dunkin' Donuts. I want the black people hook up at Red Lobster. I want all the white guilt money and discounts while it lasts. Yeah, that's what I keep saying, while it lasts, because it's not gonna be here forever.
Mm-mm. And when it dries up, it's gonna dry all the way up.
Office for a limited time only.
Come on.
Static says, how else
office,
am I
office until white people don't feel guilty no more.
Static says, how else am I gonna afford a PS5? Mm-hmm. Miss Barnes says, my employer recognized Juneteenth as a holiday and gave most of the office off, but if you're on an essential team, which I am, you got double pay for Friday. Ooh,
nice.
That double pay.
Ooh, that make it worth it.
Oh, that double pay.
I'm
be
not
hitting.
Even gonna lie, that make it worth it.
Damn, that double pay be hitting. Oh, I remember them days.
Be like, oh, you be like, double pay. I'll be more than happy to show my black ass up.
Especially if somebody without kids. Oh, that was the only thing that used to make it okay. They be like, well, we need somebody to work on Christmas Eve, and you know, the majority of the team can't be here. We need a couple people just to come in. There won't be much to do. We just need someone here to answer the phone. And only thing we can do is offer double pay. And everybody's like, I don't know, my kids, I have Christmas. I was like, as an atheist, childless person, I will be here on Christmas Eve.
I show up even if I'm the only one.
Right. How many hours you need? Because I'm willing to do more than 8. Come okay?
on. Double time. Yes, I do a full 12 if you need it.
Be in the office by myself, surfing the internet, reading message boards, getting
playing music out loud.
Right. Getting 2 times. Oh, double time. Oh, it's so rare to get it, but it's so
ain't
good.
Ain't it though?
All right, we had the next episode 2122. Welcome to the party, pal. We had Vern and Corey on from Living Color.
Yes.
So many people enjoyed this episode. This is one of the rare times where we have guests and a whole lot of comments.
Okay.
We got 8 comments.
Y'all had a lot to say, because normally I'd be like, well, y'all covered everything, so I'm good.
D. Ramsey says, 5 stars from start to finish. This episode had everything. Black history, anger, rage, jokes, and joy. Thank you.
Thank you.
You know, honestly, it's a lot like when I just go by the crib and hang out with my folks. Like, this is basically how me and my family talk all the time. Just like, fuck Trump, first and foremost. Let's talk about that. Anyway, what else is going on with these whites, you know? And work our way into some funny shit.
Mm-hmm.
And it also helps that they listen to the show and they're fans and just genuinely good people. Like,
ain't they though?
Like I said, when we met them, it was just such overwhelming, like
so much love,
right? Like, it's almost off-putting, because it's just like, oh man. And like the same vibe extends out to their fans and stuff. Like, their fans are super cool, because you know, we done that was literally my first rock concert ever.
Mm-hmm.
When we went to Raleigh.
Yeah, and you meet all types of people and you don't know kind of how the interaction is gonna be, and they were just like, yo, what's up?
Yeah, very welcoming.
Yes.
So Ann says, today we are all progressive Americans. India says, love this episode. I always like how Rod and Karen interact with their guests. It's never really awkward, and it feels like they are talking to friends and genuinely enjoying themselves. Quick question. Anyone out there creating the Blackout to Cookout playlist on Spotify? Because the playlist is banging so far. Thank you, India. And I'm not even doing that. So hopefully somebody is. If you want to collect the songs and send them to me, I'll make a list on my Spotify for y'all to follow or whatnot. Stella says, I do have a coronavirus song list, though, just letting y'all know. That one's terrible. I don't know why anyone would follow it, but
no.
Stella says, I enjoyed this episode so much. Your interaction with Corey and Vernon sounds like old friends. You two really let your guests shine and participate in the fun. The jokes kept coming, and Karen was a star on this show. Her pun game was on 100. I love how Corey and Vernon were hyping her up. Thank you so much, because I needed every bit of this joy.
Oh, that was having hyping my bad puns.
Yep.
I had a ball.
I think that's part of it, you know? Like, there's a lot of fans out there. It's like, oh, Karen getting the puns in.
Yes! My pun game has improved, y'all. This improved a lot.
Folding sandwich bread or something like that. Brooklyn Shoebase.
You know I don't be following no rules with my puns. I didn't know there was rules.
Brooklyn Shoebase says, I love this episode. Vern and Corey are great guests. Lakita says, one of the best things to come from the Rona is y'all getting really good guests, because everyone is supposed to be home. I love how Vern was so excited to be there to hit the ground running. Also love Vern and Corey's brotherly dynamic. They made it so fun. Great show. Yeah, yeah. They're like that in real life.
Mm-hmm.
So that was cool.
They are hilarious.
I don't know what landmine we avoided with the Questlove thing, but
I'm glad we avoided it.
Appreciate us avoiding it.
Thank you for kicking it, Corey.
Yeah, this ain't the Breakfast Club, okay? We don't want no smoke. We just trying to have fun. But yeah, that was dope. And that's been a thing, a conscientious choice I've made when we've had guests in the last so many weeks or whatever. I don't do the Reading Rainbow segment on purpose. I just want to start, mm-hmm. talk to them,
right,
and just hit the ground running. We may or may not even touch topics. It's really just depends on what we're talking about, right, how it's flowing.
Right, and the guests, because, you know, we kind of know the vibe of the guests.
Yeah, and so, you know, when I say that this is something I think about a lot, that this is a creative outlet for me, and it's not like the podcast is a job, but it's also my creativity, our creativity,
mm-hmm.
and a collaboration of the guest creativity together, you know, kind of like in an upside down triangle, you know. Shout out to the Illuminati. Like I feel like I'm at the bottom of that triangle, being like, okay, I'm spreading my creativity out, and sometimes it's just me and Karen, and we're just working it together, you know. But with the guests and stuff, you know, it gets bigger and bigger, and some guests were able to like really build a whole world in a podcast, and
mm-hmm.
you know, I really enjoy that. Let's see. Kim Doc says, Living Color is quietly the reason CM Punk was as elevated in the WWE as he got. Code of Personality is the most iconic walkout music in wrestling history. So much of the talk of Punk coming back centers on the feeling, on that feeling when his music hits out of nowhere. Living Color's music. They made him, in my eyes, legendary. This is an amazing podcast from Lady Antebellum. Wanted you to know they still about that Antebellum and not fully changing their abhorrent stage name to the renaming of a Grammy category. I was tossed it back and forth in agreement across the board. Sometimes I feel like y'all speak my thoughts and my feelings aloud. Thank you, Kim. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, baby.
Appreciate you. Mm-hmm. EVE says, the thing for me is when we talk about these subjects that are rage inducing, that are exhausting, all this stuff, is I still try to filter it through funny. And I always love when we can, especially good guests, they get that, okay, yeah, this is serious, but it's also funny, you know. And so we could be like, yeah, the progressive, there's a bigger issue about changing to urban progressive whatever, but also isn't this shit funny? Like, you know, we're gonna go to Progressive Outfitters, like this shit don't even really make sense.
No,
like,
it doesn't.
Racism just so stupid. EVE says, love this episode. I'm a big fan of Living Color and I appreciate them, especially as a black girl who loved heavy metal growing up. It's lit whenever they come on, and Corey has the best role in Platoon because the brother had enough, so he wounded himself to go home, and I was like, that's what's up. Fuck these white people and their fake war. Mm-hmm. All right, last thing for this episode is the poll. What do you prefer for the Grammys? Urban music, progressive R&B, or black music?
I mean, you know my stance. Just call them niggas. So just call it black music, because that's what it is. Regardless of what you put on it, that's what you're going to call it.
Yeah. For me, I think...
I don't like the progressive.
Cause I think I prefer black music. Just, yeah, call a thing, beloved.
Right,
I know they would never do that.
Is going around what you're trying to call it. Yeah.
Well, also, just let me be clear. Let me be clear. I do understand that there are going to be black people that would be pissed if it was called black music. Mm-hmm. So we're not a monolith, if that's the point. There's no name you could call it, because we know what it means, black music. There's no name you could call it that would not be, like, controversial. But I like the idea of black music, because even then, when some white person or non-black person wins music. It, it's like, well, they doing our music.
Yes, they are doing, like, black music,
you know, like, you know. But I know that won't happen, because it's so weird, because then they have, like, the Latin Grammys, and that's okay, you know what I mean? Like, it's not like the urban Grammys, you know. So, like, why can't it be the black with a capital B? Why not? Anyway, 72% of people say black music, 16% say progressive R&B, and only 12% like urban music. Kim Doc says, somebody in the comments said something like, just call it jungle music and get on with it and I die. The Grammy is a white institution, the face of the system, systematic racism, fuck them. It's definitely a white institution.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm glad for the black people that get they shine and they deserve recognition, but I just can't even really watch the show, because I never feel like it's a home for us. It's just not meant for us.
A lot of times if I'm online, I just watch people reaction online in real time, and y'all don't let me know who won and who lost and what y'all mad about.
21-23, you should have minded your business.
Oh, come on.
Me and Karen, solo episode. Anne of Burger King, I see you've changed your name. Anna Burger King says, this clip has been going around. David Bowie is the musician who died a few years ago. The same time Prince died. I remember you and Karen didn't know his music. He was married to the model Iman. Anyway, this is the interview where he questions the way MTV decided what music videos will play. You had Living Color on last episode, so I thought this might be interesting. Yeah, I've seen this clip a few times floating around Twitter and stuff. It's basically him questioning the entire way that MTV at the time was even dealing with black music. Let me see if I can play it for y'all. But yeah, I did think it was pretty cool. And I don't know that man like that. So I know there's some other shit that happened with him, and accused of pedophilia and all this stuff. Oh, this shit, 5 minutes? Four? We'll play what we can of it. I probably won't be able to play the whole thing, because, like I said, we got a hard out at 4.
You know, It occurred to me, having watched MTV over the last few months, that it's a solid enterprise with it, and it's got a lot going for it. I'm just floored by the fact that there's so few black artists featured on it. Why is that?
I think that we're trying to move in that direction. We want to play artists that seem to be doing music that fits into what we want to play for MTV. The company is thinking in terms of narrow casting.
That's evident. It's evident in the fact that the only few black artists that one does see are on about 2:30 in the morning or to around 6. Very few are featured predominantly during the day.
No, that's a...
I'll say that over the last couple of weeks these things have been changing, but it's a slow process.
I know, it's funny, I think people have different perceptions. When you wind up watching, let's say you watch an hour or two or even three a day, people somehow come away with different ideas about what we are doing.
What? That
we don't have any kind of day part.
That's a fact. If the shit come on from like 2 something a.m. like to 6, like nobody's watching this. Mm-hmm. Like, so he's saying the bulk of the day is nothing but majority of white people.
Mm-hmm. Well, at the time they really didn't play a lot of black artists.
Michael Jackson had to fight to be
right. Michael Jackson broke the color barrier essentially, mm-hmm, for music videos with black artists.
Correct.
This is also a way to hide, because it's like saying y'all don't play any rap on your radio station. It's like, well, it depends on when you're listening. It's like, well, y'all play rap 2 to 6 in the morning, but they're like, well, we play rap during the day. And they're like, yeah, you play a couple rap songs, and if I just happen to get in the car at 105,
right,
get out the car at 107, and then get back in the car at 2:33, and I just happen to hear only those two rap, I go, wow, I heard 2 rap songs on your station today, good job. But if I really sat there for 3 hours, you're not playing enough rap or black music or whatever. You know, I use rap as a
for me to even
in general, but as
yeah.
but like, you're not playing enough black music for me to even be like that, you know? So mm-hmm, like Whitney Houston, Michael Jackson, those are like huge artists for black people at the time. That's why, you know, one of the worst things that people would say about them, and it's so fucked up and unfair, and the retcon on Whitney Houston has been amazing to see the last few years. But there was a long period of time when it was like, oh, they make black music for white people, like they make white music essentially, and to a certain extent you do have to make whiter music to make the crossover for some of this shit, you mm-hmm know. They weren't really fucking with artists that was putting black first and foremost, so you would have to like cross over some level of appeal to whiteness, you know. Lionel Richie, as Vern made that joke, you know, like you kind of, and it's not shade, it's mm-hmm literally just the economics of the business, but mm-hmm, yeah. David Bowie noticing that, and then they gaslights with David Bowie immediately with, well, I mean, people come with it's crazy how people just come up with these different perceptions, as if you know,
as if you don't show like right a whole fucking block,
this isn't the truth, it's just how you perceive it,
right,
for anything. Mm. Let alone a black artist, they parted out of what would be, quote, prime time. Mm. We don't have that.
Because one sees a lot on the there's one black station on television that I keep picking up. I'm not sure which station it's on. But there seem to be a lot of black artists making very good videos that I'm surprised aren't used on MTV.
Well, of course, also we have to try and do what we think not only New York and Los Angeles will appreciate, but also Poughkeepsie or Midwest. Pick some town in the Midwest that will be scared.
So once again,
mm-hmm, he can't do now a white audience.
Now it's about the working class white people, and I would say this:
they're killing with that.
If you're a working white class person, I don't, you might not be listening to the show. You might be. I don't know. But if I could address that elephant in the room for a second, the amount of disrespect and coddling there is for that white working class, it's as if they are basically saying you are fucking backwards idiots, and they pawn off regression on the working white class.
Mm-hmm.
They pawn that off. When you look at the things that politicians won't touch, the things that these corporations won't touch, and I'm gonna say something that I think is more, you know, like it's the opposite of what most people would expect black people to believe, but I think the working white class is much more resilient and much more progressive than they're giving credit for.
Yeah, they do that just so they don't have to take action.
Working white class is the white people that I went to school with, the mm-hmm. white people that lived in my neighborhoods, the white people that, you know, I worked with, because I'm working class. Correct. So I'm not saying they're all good and all this shit. There's plenty of them that are plenty fucked up. But there are some good working white class people who aren't with this bullshit. Mm-hmm. That even, and I don't even mean that on some, they some woke book reading motherfuckers like it's some Twitter signifying performative shit. No, I mean, there are white people who just have a heart of empathy. White people that really do believe all that good stuff in the Bible that's actually about mm-hmm. like being like Jesus and loving people and shit. Yeah, there are white people like that out there.
I've seen it with my own two eyes right. in action.
It doesn't mean they don't have white privilege. It doesn't mean they're not affected by white supremacy, none of this shit. But it does mean that they have more capacity for either change, or they just have a heart that's like, I'm not gonna let no evil happen in my sight, so fuck that shit. Like, I don't, racism is evil to me, and I know I didn't go to school to figure that one out. Like, I just love my black neighbors. I love, you know, it's and so it's funny, because my personal belief is a lot of these corporations, the NFL, MTV in this case, politicians like whether it be a Bernie Sanders, Joe Biden, Hillary Clinton, or obviously the Republicans, way more repugnant than any of those three.
Right.
This thing where they pawn off shit to the working white class is abhorrent. Like, they'll never win the white vote in the Democratic. Right. They'll never win it. Mm-mm. But what always gets taken for granted and doesn't get talked about enough is they do win some. It's literally, and I'll never say these words again on the show, but it's literally not all white people. Like we'll say the 53% of white women, and that is a way high number. It's terrible. I'll never be certain and sure if I'm in a room full of random white women that I'm like, okay, these people got my back, right? But there's also like 40 something percent of white women that was like, no, I'm not with that bullshit.
Right.
And so
they matter too,
right? Yeah, I'm just like, it's, this isn't me saying like opining them, it's just me saying like how disrespectful to your sensibilities, you know what I'm saying, how disrespectful to them to pawn off. Because I don't know that working white class is what's holding MTV back, because MTV doesn't give a fuck about dispersing Los Angeles and New York culture in any other area. Mm-mm. But all of a sudden it's like, well, we don't want Idaho getting mad. No, you don't want black artists on your fucking show, and then you flip it into, well, it's really white people in Idaho. If I was a white person in Idaho, I'd be incensed. Like, the fuck are you talking about? I don't have a problem with that shit. Say you got a problem with it. Don't put it on me. Like, I'm home changing the channel because I don't like listening to Michael Jackson. You know who loves black music? White people. You know who else loves black music? Black people. You know who else loves black people, black music? Everybody that like rhythm and talent and shit. You know? So to pawn that off on some, like, some motherfucking Wyoming or some shit as if that's the problem on MTV.
Yeah, they have bullshit. A lot of times have some, not trying to funny, some of the lowest populations in some of these states. Not trying to be fun. It's like, okay, the states that have the largest populations, which means, you know, Negroes, all us went to the big cities doing the migration and shit like that. So you're not going to find, not that we're not there, but you ain't going to find a large fucking collection of us. We in these larger cities.
But it's you telling me that the world's not ready to hear that. You know who else is in a large collection of cities? Most of these fucking artists.
Right.
So that doesn't even make sense. The entire complex of MTV at that time was promoting what was hot in New York and LA and the big cities. So when it comes to black people though, well, we gotta slow down, okay? That's not, Idaho's not ready for that.
To Death by Prince, which we're playing, or a string of other black faces.
That's
and black
very
music.
Interesting. Isn't that interesting?
You know, we have to play the music that we think an entire country is gonna like, and certainly we're a rock and roll station now. The question would be asked, well, should, since we're in New York, should PLJ play, the Isley Brothers? Well, you and I might say, yeah, because we have grown up in an era when the Isley Brothers mean something to me, and so do the Spinners. even way after the Isley Brothers. But what does it mean to a 17-year-old? Well, if you talk on the phones to these guys like I did when I was in radio, it's
well,
scary.
I'll tell you what it means. I'll tell you what maybe the Isley Brothers or Marvin Gaye means to a black 17-year-old.
Ah.
And surely he's part of America as well.
No question. Mm-hmm. And that's why you're seeing those things.
Do you not find that it's a frightening predicament to be in?
Yeah, but less so here than in radio.
And is it not? Well, no, don't say, well, it's not me, it's them. Is it?
Yeah, what's funny is David Bowie said, do you not find it's a frightening predicament to be in? And that white man thought he meant him. David Bowie's still talking about the 17-year-old black kid.
Yeah, right. It's
that
not
disconnect
the same
was so
thing.
Quick. He was like, I mean, yeah, I am scared. What are you scared of? You're the one with the fucking finger on the button
you,
and what's getting played.
You got the power.
Right. He's like, it is frightening to think about. He's like, as a 17-year-old black kid, knowing that these motherfuckers ain't going to play the shit that matters to you, isn't that frightening?
Right, and you potentially losing a lot of audience that would actually get your ratings up.
Right, and David Bowie goes, it's not me, them. Like, wait, when did you switch that?
And is it not, well, no, don't say, well, it's not me, it's them. Is it not possible that it should be a conviction of the station and of other radio stations, to be fair? It does seem to be rampant through American media. Should it not be a challenge to try and make the media far more integrated in those in music,
happening.
Especially of anything in musical terms?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, I think it's happening because white music and white musicians are now starting to play more than ever. More than they have lately, let's say in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
What black artists have been into, mm-hmm. and now.
You mean appropriation?
Right. People want to see themselves. Not
white
funny.
Artists are now starting to play black music more than ever.
Like, I don't give a fuck. They're not black.
Which is also a lie.
Hopefully the long...
Like, they've been, ever since Payola and shit, white artists been playing black people. Elvis, you know, like, come on.
Lines are going to start to blur. And when we play a band like ABC.
Yeah.
Well, there's white and black kids who are enjoying it. And all of a sudden... Well, it's a little bit easier for a white kid to understand it. The fact is, quite frankly, I could even point you towards a letter in the new issue of The Record,
yeah.
the magazine The Record, responding to an article by Dave Marsh that this kid just ranted about what he didn't want to see on MTV.
Well, that's
and
his problem.
In no uncertain terms. Well, what I'm saying, though, is that there's... As you say, there's certainly a lot of black kids and white kids who may want to see black music. Mm. There's a ton of them who are... It's not like it was in 67 where you say, yeah, I'm not into that, you know, but you are. Yeah. Now it's, you're into that? I don't like you.
And then why... This is the thing. This reminds me of AMC with The Mask lately, where they go, we don't want to be political, so we're not going to... We're going to tell people you don't have to wear a mask at AMC, and basically saying, if you want to wear a mask inside of a movie theater that is closed, has air conditioning, and can't really practice true social distancing, mm-hmm. people are going to be eating in there and shit. We're just going to leave it up to you. And people were like, what the fuck are you talking about? And they were like... Oh, I mean, okay, you have to wear a mask, okay? Scientifically, it's the right thing to do. And it's like, that's what he just did, where it's like this cop out of, well, there's racist people out there and we have to cater to them. It's like, you don't have to.
No, you don't.
The same way you don't have to cater to the black kids, apparently. You've been sacrificing these black kids for years and don't give a fuck. But then when it comes to the racist people, it's like, well, we have to give their opinion validity.
That's scary, and we can't just turn around and go, well, look, this is the right way.
Ah, this they landed David Bowie's face.
He is not amused. Amused at all.
This nigga look like he is fade tight right now. Oh, my God.
He looking like, the hell you talking about?
He's like, and now I'm about to play the big joke on this motherfucker.
I think a little bit at a time.
Interesting. Okay, thank you very much.
Does that make sense? Valid point?
I understand your point of view.
Okay.
Yeah, he didn't say it was valid. He said he understood it.
Yeah.
That's not the same.
That's interesting. They came that far. We've come so far that MTV is actually, that's on MTV News' website. YouTube. Like, they put that out. I'd be almost embarrassed to put that shit out.
You know what I mean? Like, this is what we used to stand for. Nothing. Anyway, back to this. I remember you and Karen didn't know it's me, blah, blah, blah. Oh, okay, yeah, cool. All right, but thank you for the clip. We did play the whole thing, so that's cool. Mm-hmm. Rich says, I agree with you, Rod. DC Mayor got ass. Yeah, she thick. Correction, the gentleman, hold on, let me see, James Juanito, who was spraying Black Lives Matter on his property, is actually Filipino. So just make sure he brings some pancit, lupiang, Shanghai, Filipino spring rolls, and some pork adobo for the cookout. Oh, we love it.
I'm fine with that too.
Yep. Oh, it's James Juanillo. Okay. Or Juanillo. Okay. Thanks. Dia says, great. Greetings, Rod and Karen. It's long, but I covered three topics because the episode is just so good. On Raising a Black Girl, I wanted to say that defunding the police, some very difficult conversations need to be had in an effort to protect women, and those difficult conversations cannot happen online because it gets shouted down, or just asking questions as views is opposing someone or divisive. And because those conversations cannot happen online, a lot of people are going to get left out of the process when policies are made. Mm-hmm. This is one of those things, if you're not in the room, you're on the table, right. You know? The other thing I would mention too is a lot of abolition and a lot of defunding still ends up with some level of like community intervention and stuff, to which, you know, you're going to need to have some level of, in my opinion, obviously, ask questions until they feel like they have answers, and if they don't have answers and processes that are deliberate and they know they can go through, they're not going to accept it.
And that's something hard for people to understand. You can't present something like, we have the answer, and then people start asking questions, and a lot of the shit they're asking, you haven't even considered or thought about, like you said, or have anything in practice. They were like, the fuck I'm gonna follow this for? Y'all don't know what y'all doing.
Right. And I, you know, I've listened to quite a few podcasts and read some columns and stuff from different people that are working in this area. And, you know, at the end of the day, I think that they have great goals. They have their hearts in the right place. They believe in this radical empathy and forgiveness and all this shit. I don't know that society, even Black people, are there. Maybe we will one day. But I just know that if somebody harms someone in my family or something, and the solution is some sort of like, we just gonna talk about it, or they can do come to my house and garden or whatever fucking solutions people, because they never really say fully what a solution would look like for something like that.
Come on.
And what justice looks like for that, and right. What makes me feel better, because they say center the victim, but then what if it's a victim like me where I'm like, fuck them. You know, because then they go, well, hold up, we can't let the victims just do this, because then they'll be too vengeful. Well, then you're not really centering me in a way that I agree to anyway.
Right.
Maybe, you know, for some, I know motherfuckers that really say, I don't forgive. So if they say that, and then someone does something criminal to them, how are you centering them by being like, nothing gonna happen? So those people do want punishment. So I think it's just difficult. It's icky. You're right. It can't happen online. And I'll keep my ear to the streets. I'm still reading some of these books and stuff, I think they're scared that they're gonna lose everyone for the, well, defund the police and abolish the police. They think they're gonna lose us, and we're gonna be like, fuck that then, because I don't abolish shit then, don't change nothing. No, I agree the system's broken.
Agreed.
So that, like, I'm cool with what, like, let's get rid of this shit, cool, absolutely. But don't then yada, yada, yada me when it's like, so what are we going to think about for this? That's important, too.
Right.
Don't just say, well, I just think imagination is beautiful.
Like I said, for me, and my mind can be changed. You know, I'm not one of the people with my arms folded to talk about change my mind. Mm-hmm. I am willing to bend, and I am willing to change. But my questions are valid, and I want something that's foundational. Because if something happened, like I said, I don't want your mom and them on some voting committee voting and shit like that and centering me. And I'm like, this motherfucker should go to jail. You are, we don't have jail. Well, I don't want them around me. You know, I mean, let's just keep it real. Like, what are the consequences? What are the repercussions? And the thing is, I understand that you have to change the mind of the people. this is true. Well, then you have to do slow progression. You can't just get rid of a system, don't really have anything to replace it, because something will come up in its place. Either you're going to put it there or something else will form on its own to take its place.
Yeah, I just keep thinking, like, what happens if we disband the police, blah, blah, blah. And then the fucking white supremacist people that are basically the police that work in the force right now, they just be like, no. Like, okay, cool. Now we don't have badges and rules and shit, but remember, there's no police force. There's no thing that can make us not have these guns. Right. There's nothing that can make us not arm ourselves and be a militia. We decided, you say community policing, well, we policing our community this way.
Right.
And as white people, they ain't shit you can do. What, you gonna call the police on us? What, you gonna come take our guns out of cold dead hands? Like, this is the, you know, so.
And that's valid.
Right. There's things I think of like that, and I don't think that's like a crazy thing, because I live in this fucking racist ass, country, this white supremacist country, and it's not beyond white people to do that shit. You know, or they come to our neighborhood and fuck us up, and then we over here talking about, so well, I guess we'll have a community panel to figure out why they bombed the church with the four black girls. Like, yeah, it's not, it's just, anyway.
That's not gonna fly.
I don't mean to shit on the idea, the concept in general. I just know that there's scenarios that people are gonna wanna have answers for, and I don't think those people are just like, you know, I love the cops, Blue Lives Matter. Mm. Some of these people are just scared because, you know, they're gonna need some sort of apparatus or logic to work there.
Right, and their fear is valid, and you can't just dismiss their fear to get your point across. And that's, now, people like me, you make people like me mad when I ask a very, very valid question. You go, me too, okay, you too, now what, bitch, now what? Okay, me too, we both here, okay, now what? And I don't ever get an answer to that question.
The Tulsa massacre, I know that they didn't teach it to many of us in school. There are a lot of things that we wish we learned, but there's also something for being inquisitive, because I bet that after people watch Watchmen, that is still all they know about the Tulsa massacre. Did it make them inquisitive enough to get a book or at least read the wiki page? You know the saying, youth is wasted on the young. Sometimes history is wasted on the young. I find myself wanting to learn more about topics just because I have grown and experienced more in school. Yeah, they talked about how Europe had a monarchy, but now as an adult, I'm more inquisitive about it. I eat that type of history up, and about wars and different kings and queens. I mean, that's going to be a chronic problem forever in every generation, but I feel like these kids have more access to stuff that we did at much younger ages. And my personal anecdotal experience is that more people didn't just look up the Tulsa massacre and the Wikipedia page and stuff because of Watchmen. More professors taught about it, more schools taught about it, more people talked about it in their churches and to the young kids in their lives. So I would say yes, that the young people learned from that. Now, you're not gonna catch them all, and it would be best to be taught in schools, because that's the best way to catch them all. And that's why it's omitted, because they don't want to catch them all. But I think a lot more people did learn because of that pop culture moment. Lastly, on Dave Chappelle's criticism of him not mentioning women or trans victims of police brutality in his comedy special, I understand the hurt, but I also want to defend his art, not him so much, but his art form, because he got a lot wrong on the stage. For example, in Dallas, 5 officers are killed, not 9. He got some Chris Dorner facts wrong. Comedy doesn't always get it right, but I guess in comedians I like, I kind of eat the meat and spit out the bones. Yeah, I'm kind of the same way with pretty much all comedians. Like, that's the thing. It extends to me for comedians I don't even like. And for the ones I do like, even with them, I'm like, this premise is off. This power dynamic is, but I think I just look at comedy as a art and not just a thing I'm consuming, or kind of like woke people do now, where they look at comedy and they take it so serious and literal that it isn't. Now, that being said, what Dave's special was last was not comedy. So if people want to break that down and say factually it's just inaccurate, it's just blah, blah, I don't mind that because I don't think he presented it as in a comedic fashion.
And it looks and sound like, because I haven't seen it before, what people saying, it sounds like he was just talking off the top of his head on something.
I don't know. He hadn't performed in 100-some days. I don't know if he practiced in his house. Mm-hmm. I don't know all that stuff. I don't know how much he looked up. I don't know how much of it was on the fly. It felt very on the fly, but you never know. He's so good. He could be, have practiced that shit at home and whatever. I shouldn't say welcome. That's not true. That's not true in the least. Let me stop that lie coming out my mouth. I understand all criticism that these motherfuckers get. You that big, motherfuckers gonna talk about you. And I understand that on the platforms of the people talking about you. That's what the fuck they do too. You know what I mean? Like the game is the game. Like Dave Chappelle putting out a special and then like, David Dennis Jr. wrote a long like thing about it and stuff and interrogated and critical of it, and there were people, and that's what he does, right? And then I saw people on Twitter harassing him both ways of, you didn't go hard enough critically, you were too critical on Dave Chappelle. That's what they do. Like, it's all this fucking cycle of just like a thing happens, this person comments, and then this person comments, that's, and this person comments, and they're all time. Serving different audiences. Mm-hmm. It's all crass, kind of this is my cynical commercialism is what I believe it is. Felix says the Little Britain thing comes off as a little disingenuous to me because those dudes are doing a whole damn lot with the blackface on that show. That shit was really bad even then. The fact that the first stuff I saw on TV when my African family moved to the UK was a bunch of blackface in primetime was the most jarring transition, bruv. Britain has its own tradition of blackface that's well documented, so I don't buy anyone's excuses who was doing it in the 2000s. Every black person I knew at the time always gave the show the side eye except for the homophobic jokes. Everyone of every race happily laughed at that stuff, shaking my head. That Bo Selecta show also really did a number on Craig Davis' career too. Dude only just recently came back in a big way. The fact that they were allowed to get away with that and still have careers tells you a lot. I was more of a Catherine Tate fan myself. Now that lady could do some bloody skits, bruv. My God. Well, Felix, that sounds like a lot of good stuff from across the pond that me and Karen would not know anything about. Mm-mm. But I will say this, it don't matter because they did the bare minimum. They coming to the cookout, bruv. Okay, that's how it works.
Yeah, you ain't got to do a lot.
I don't know if you noticed, but it ain't exactly a high bar anymore. It's the lowest of low bars. Okay, if you even acknowledge Lady A got in, Lady Antebellum, I am from the South and I do know what that means. They in, they coming. That's how it works. It sucks, right? Yep. Eva E says, here's how we know that being white is a hell of a drug, because we see these racists getting out exposed on social media and losing their jobs, but they just can't help themselves. They refuse to mind their business when no one is bothering them. At the end of the day, if they lose their job, they'll be all right because some sympathetic white person will hire them somewhere else. True. I mean, even if you racist and you black or whatever, you'll be all right. I mean, listen, here's the thing. For the most part, nothing's gonna happen to most people. Mm-mm. All these viral moments and shit you see, they get fired from a job. I don't know what people expect. You think they not gonna exist? You think some other, like, if they, like, some other company's not gonna hire them eventually? And this is for every type of bigotry and ism and all this shit. These motherfuckers are, like, because you got canceled on the internet, it doesn't really mean you're, like, you're not going to prison if you didn't commit a crime. You're just going to be persona non grata until the internet gets bored. We'll move on to another thing. If your name ever pops up, we'll remember the thing. And that's it. That's the extent of what the internet can really do to you.
Yes, sir.
You know what I mean? Motherfuckers the internet don't like, and they are doing just fucking fine.
Living their best lives.
Like, so I don't even, like, people, like, it's almost a non-starter for me. You know, when people are like, yo, what about, you know, so-and-so said such and such. I'm like, yeah, and they're going to be in concert in your local town. It don't matter.
Yes, sir.
Can't even cancel the motherfucking criminals. You know you ain't going to cancel no social faux pas motherfuckers. Except for Chrisette Michelle. That's the only person I ever seen get canceled for real. I don't know. And I think that's because her fan base is black women. Mm-hmm. And she went directly against the crew.
Yes, she did.
Do thick thighs matter? Yes or no?
Yes.
97% say yes, but 3% said no.
Who are these 3%?
I don't know. I didn't see the comments don't say it. I care about thick thighs and them dents. Shout out to 5-star crew, says Zeke. Them dents, yes. Kim Doc says, do men even care about breast anymore? Legitimate question. You ever hear about breast anymore? Do we? Yes. Y'all, breast has its own day, Titty Tuesday. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. I don't know where you got that from, but you're not about to put that evil on men. Mm-mm. We are into the tits.
Breast matters. All breast matters.
Okay. It's like, pardon the, comparison, Iris. It's like picking a favorite child. Not really, but you know what I'm saying? Like it's 1 and 1A.
Yeah. Okay? Yeah. Watermelon, cantaloupes, apples, they all matter.
It's a photo finish. Okay. At the finish line. For all these parts.
No matter how big the jugs.
Episode 2124, no justice, no crease, when we had three guys on. That was fun. We got a lot of comments on this one too. Got like, five comments. Let's see here. Brooklyn Shoebay says, my ex-husband was a huge football fan. As he played peewee football and high school football, he watched every football movie except the one where the NFL replaced striking football players with scabs and starred Keanu Reeves, The Replacements. I saw that. However, my favorite sports movie is Any Given Sunday, as it was the first football movie I saw where I understood the plays. I embarrassed the fuck out of my husband in the movie theater, cheering and clapping. Oh God. After a while, he whispered, it's just a movie, relax. LOL. My other favorites are Rocky 3 and Real Steel, Robot Boxing in a Family of Real Steel. You'll cry if you watch Real Steel. That's almost not really a sport. It's a sports movie, but it's robot boxing, but
We seen that in the movie theaters, didn't we? Mm-hmm. Yes, we did.
I also like the boxing movie with Christian Bale and Marky Mark. I don't think I saw that one.
I don't remember.
Some good picks though. Some good picks up in there. And Replacements was funny, man. I can't remember who played the wide receiver. It might have been Orlando Jones, but somebody played that wide receiver. That black man was funny. Classic R&B lover says, hello Rod and Karen. This comment is not an episode specific, just something I keep meaning to share with the Black Altiz family. I know that this is the age of the Rona. People are keeping things like hand sanitizer in their cars. Please make sure you keep your sanitizer with you in a bag and you do not leave in the car. Excessive heat can cause alcohol to evaporate, rendering the disinfected properties useless. Thanks, classic R&B lover. Mm-hmm. Shannon says, if Lee Merritt advised the family to go to the White House, then shame on him. But if he didn't advise them, I understand why he was there. As an attorney, if Trump wanted to meet with my clients, I cannot just deny the meeting without telling my client. If the family, in this case, Ahmaud Arbery's mother, wants to go meet with Trump, I would advise against it. But it's ultimately the family decision. I would, however, go as her attorney to make sure I can protect their privilege and interest in the meetings, because the meeting is not a legal action that I can stop through the court action or legal standards. Again, I would advise against it, but I as an attorney, if I represent you, I cannot just quit on you because you want to attend a meeting and I don't. Yes, you can. Attorneys quit on that shit all the time, where they be like, I'm not doing it.
We've seen articles where we've seen documentaries on it where motherfuckers cut up so bad that the attorney was like, I tell this nigga to shut the fuck up. He keep going in the press and talking, so fuck him, I'm out.
You can always withdraw your representation. That being said, Shannon, don't think I'm saying that's what he should have did.
Right.
Just saying, it's always an option. I'm sure if they said, you know what, we want to have a press conference and say, fuck Black Lives Matter, Blue Lives Matter to us, and our son was a criminal, I'm sure Lee Mayer would be like, I advise against that. And if they said I'm doing it, he'd be like, yeah, well, I'm not part of that. So y'all do y'all thing, but I'm not representing this. I've had clients that wanted to hold press conferences and I advise against it, but I've said, well, if you're going to do it, let me at least read your statement. Just because I read the statement doesn't mean I condone the press conference and I'm somehow a bad attorney. Yo, Shannon, absolutely. I understand everything you're saying here. Mm-hmm. And I always forget that I follow people on Twitter that hate Sean King and hate Lee Merritt, so they always assume the worst of them. So it really could be exactly what you said. The family wanted to meet with Trump, and as a good lawyer, he's the one who should take the brunt of that from the public. He let people blame me rather than blame the family. Yeah. I totally understand that. And maybe it was him that said, we're not going to do the optics or whatever. I sometimes this happens to me just the same way it happens to anybody else. The story that was spun to me with all this projection was this idea of him telling the family, go sit in this room with Trump, take a photo op. That was the first tweet I saw, was some other activist calling him out, being like, so you were gonna use the family for a photo op? And in my brain, it's like without me even knowing it, subconsciously I was like, oh wait, they were gonna do that, and I don't have any proof that's what's gonna happen in that room. So, you know, shame on me, that's on me. Lakita says, y'all did the damn thing this week with the guests, another fun episode. It was like listening in on a phone call with five good friends. I hope they come back soon. Yeah, love those. Listen, you can also hear me sometimes on their show, so check out Three Guys On Podcast. I'll go over there and kick it with them on a Saturday if I'm not busy, and most time I just really come to listen, but you know, it's always dope to be invited on the Zoom and chat with them. You know, love those guys. EVE says, two great sports movies that weren't mentioned was Major League and The Mighty Ducks. Oh yeah, those are two good ones. Mm-hmm. I just didn't mention them because they were comedy. I don't think we mentioned any comedies really. Sure, Major League had some problematic actors, but it was funny. I don't remember who the, do you know, don't remind me. I just remember loving it. It was funny. And it's
haven't seen it in decades.
Yeah, and it's, if it's a movie from the 90s, it's probably problematic anyway by 2020 standards.
Right.
And the main kid from Mighty Ducks went on to become an unproblematic fave and married a black queen, Jodie Turner Smith. Oh, that is Pacey, is that what y'all call him? That is y'all's man, okay? I didn't watch the show that he got famous from, so I don't remember it, but I'm just glad a black woman's being loved up on, period.
Right.
The poll is, are you wearing a mask in public? Yes, no, or public? I don't leave my house. Karen?
Yes.
Same. 79% of our audience is wearing a mask in public. That's why all these debates about opening up countries are stupid. Public, I don't leave my house, 19%. And three, so that's, I'm counting y'all. And then 3% is no, and which is sad. You know, I don't know how they listen to this show. Brooklyn Shoebase says, I got a mask wardrobe, leopard print, red, black, handmade bandanas.
We do too. We got a whole thing over there on the wall.
Ibi Bebe says, or Ibi Bibi says, I got mask on mask on mask at this point. I wish I could be in the group of people that ain't leaving the house, but I gotta go to work despite my lungs already being jacked up. I requested leave from work and was denied, so I don't leave the house without hand sanitizer, alcohol wipes, and mask. I was recently diagnosed. Plot twist, it wasn't the Rona apparently, but if I catch the Rona, it won't be pretty. Whew. Aww. Well, you're in our thoughts. Be careful right out there. All right, we got no voicemails. We did get some emails, so I'll try to get through those. Mm-hmm. This is from Prath, who says, Dear Karen and Rod, this episode, Welcome to the Party, Pal, 2122. This episode with Corey and Vernon was fantastic. They are hilarious, and your collective chemistry was a joy to listen to. When Corey said, no, don't say it, to Vernon, it reminded me of looking at my best friend's face and knowing something problematic was going to leave their mouth. Regarding your sword ratchetness story and the term hoonatics, as an Australian, I'll try to break down the etymology. The term hoon is a hooligan or reckless idiot, especially a young man who drives recklessly. This combined with the lunatic gives you hoonatic. Mm. Having said all that, I'm pretty sure the author made the word up, as even white folk down here don't use that term. Thanks for another great episode. P.S. correction, apparently the Hoon TV is an internet TV show catering to Australian equivalent of NASCAR motorcycle racing enthusiasts, and their fans are called hoonatics. White people shit. You learn something new about white people every day. Israel says, check out this video on YouTube. We're catching up a podcast. I had a baby and wanted to share this little gem. I'm not sure you ever seen it, but we've seen it. I think we even played it on the show. The teacher that called a student a nigga, and then they did that Boondocks episode with Riley getting called nigga by the teacher. Mm-hmm. If we had more time, I would play it just for the audience sake so we could do it again and make jokes, but we really got a hard out at 4, so I can't do it. But yeah, they said, sorry, I forgot to mention I'm on episode 1987, Walk Like You're Free. If you ever seen this, but this nigga episode of Boondocks, I think it was based on this news story. You are mine and CWG's favorite podcast. We appreciate you, Karen and Roberto. Thank you.
Thank you.
We appreciate you. Mm-hmm. And like I said, if it wasn't for, it's a 4-minute clip. So I probably don't have time. Well, let's see what we can do at the end. Let's go to the next one. Alicia says, Rod and Bossy and Karen laughing in the background, please tell me you heard of this. My cousin put me on to it. I automatically subscribed. Alicia, not the Burger King loving one. Thank you. My fave, Alicia, right now. Looking for LaToya as a podcast from Insecure.
Yes, I haven't understood. I subscribe. People that have said this is hilarious.
Thank you. Rebecca says, good morning, Ryder Karen. In celebration of Juneteenth, I gave a little something extra to you today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Like I said, we will take all the white guilt money. Mm-hmm. I'm a regular supporter of your show, and I thought it would be nice if today I gave a little more support. I live in Maine and have been to a lot of Black Lives Matter protests up here, and so far there have been a lot of Black Lives Matter protests up here, but so far I've only been able to attend one. On my drive to the eye doctor this morning, I heard a radio announcer talking about a celebration of Juneteenth going on in Portland. They said come out and have a picnic. I cringed at the idea of a bunch of white people having a picnic in honor of Juneteenth. Felt very tone deaf, so I thought of a better way to recognize the Juneteenth was to support Black businesses and artists. I wanted to celebrate you and Karen and the many voices you bring to your show. I love the content you have, and I know how much work goes into it. Thank you. Now, you may be thinking, white guilt. Maybe. But I'm not looking for forgiveness or redemption. It's just, hey, you're awesome, and thanks for being awesome, and let's celebrate how awesome you are. Yeah, I think maybe, and it might just be my personality, but like a little bit of guilt is good, man. Like, you know, not saying it should be a whole thing. You don't lay your weight on other people, but, and like, as long as it's not about seeking like some level of forgiveness or redemption from individual Black people and shit, I'm guilty as a man, like a straight dude walking around in this world. There's a bunch of shit leaning my way that I didn't work for or earn. Like, you know, being able-bodied, you know, there's a bunch of shit. So I'm not saying it's like some performative guilt or it has to be this overall overarching like theme to your personality. But like a little, I think it's, maybe guilt isn't the best word, but like some recognition that this imbalance is there. I don't think that's a bad thing. There was a very interesting podcast I listened to yesterday talking about white guilt and how the random gifts of money make Black people feel uncomfortable. It does for a lot of us. As a white person, it made me cringe, but I need to hear how tone deaf my race is. So when I hear dumb shit like this in my life, I can enlighten them on the ignorance. Yeah, I'll tell you what, I prefer the money to the like apologies with no money that come. You know what I'm saying? Yeah,
that's true.
Like, I prefer a motherfucker give me some money than be like, I am so sorry about, I didn't know. Okay, I had no idea they were beating you niggas like hotcakes. I didn't know. I found out today. I turned on the news. I don't know what I've been my whole life, but.
Did you know? Did you know? I mean,
they have been whooping your ass. And
I'm just not finding this information out.
You just been coming to work like it's no big deal.
I don't want that.
So I don't want that. And I wouldn't do that. Like, that's like if, you know, there was a sexual assault case that went like really big in the public and I just start hitting up every woman I know like, I'm so sorry. They is out here just sexually assaulting people. Like, what? No. Like, anyway. But, you know, money in America is the closest people gonna get to justice. So,
yes, sir. I think
everyone's gonna cash that check. As long as you don't turn around and be like, and now I can say nigger, most of us don't care.
Most of us don't.
What if that's what white people did? They give money and they're like, no, I can say it. I gave $25 to T with Queen and Jay. So
I invested in the Blacks.
I put in quite a hefty price to the Breakfast Club the other day, if I say so myself. And I can now say nigger. Come, it's not racist anymore. So as long as that's not happening, I don't care. The podcast is called Reply All, and the episode I'm referencing is The Least You Could Do, the girl who gave out her Venmo for white people to donate to her so she could forgive them for their white transgressions. Was pretty funny till it wasn't, because it doesn't work like that. But that girl is a total Black capitalist and needs to be recognized. Yeah, that is the amount of socialist Black capitalists that do shit like that is so funny to me. With this country, we're never gonna be free. There's no right choice. It's like, I'm a Black socialist and I hate money. Anyway, hit my Venmo for this free labor I've been doing all over Twitter. It's like, I don't know. Because if you get too much money, now you a piece of shit, right? Same thing. Minnesota Freedom Fund trying to get people out of bail. people fucked around and accidentally gave too much money. Now they a piece of shit. Like, I don't know what's happening. I don't feel the need to call my black friends and ask them how they're doing. I know how they're doing. They're struggling. What I need to do is lend my voice to stand with them and vote. Yes. Anyway, love you guys.
The voting part, baby.
Yeah. Anyway, love you guys. Thank you for so much for all you do. I'm gonna shut up now. Love, Rebecca. Thanks, Rebecca.
Thank you.
And yeah, that tangible shit. Not to steal anything from the hotels, but tangible shit is what I'm on. So, you know, voting, if you're marching, if you're using your social media to be like, hey, Black Lives Matter, that kind of shit, I think is more important than, you know, some of this other shit. Mm-hmm. Adam says, dear Rod and Karen, thank you for this episode with Vernon and Corey. It is always a joy to listen to my favorite band and podcasters on the show. Living Color is a national treasure. It's always entertaining when Corey's on the show, and I know I was going to be a treat when Vernon came on the show. I had met him years ago when he spoke at a music lecture, when he talked about growing up in New York City and when he started playing his music career, and then he formed Living Color and his solo material. After the lecture, there was a meet and greet, and he was cool and down to earth. I have to say that episode is the best of the year, and keep up the great work, Adam. Thanks. Aww, Adam,
thank you. Yeah, and they both have a lot of knowledge and like a lot of history.
Yeah, without feeling professorial or talking down to you,
right?
They're
like, look, this is what I learned, or this is what I know, or this is who I know. You're like, okay,
they've lived life.
Yes,
and they just down to earth about relating it to you. I love that, you know, because they could have high-sided us and been on some like, nigga, we are somebody. We got 2 minutes. Okay, let me add a session just so we can finish this. I'm gonna pause real quick. John writes in, Abolition Wars. That would be a good Transformer spinoff.
Oh, it would be.
War for Cybertron, Abolition Wars. Good morning, Rod and Karen. Rod, as someone who works on the police reform at the local level, thank you for the deep dive discussion about defunding and abolition, and for the valid questions and points you raised. The whole damn discussion has been so exhausting due to all the reasons you mentioned. It's a perfect illustration of how people pick a team and then fight with very little interest in actually listening to the other side or being honest and clear about the limitations and uncertainties of their models, while instead exaggerating the support of their position and yelling at anyone who doesn't immediately get on board. It reminds me of the cult-like pushing of Medicare for all as the end-all be-all solution to everything healthcare related. Oh my God, yes. Yes, nigga. That is what it reminds me of.
It's just like the Bernie Sanders shit.
Oh, it's like you scratched the itch in my brain that was just there.
Yeah.
Hold on. Can you see yourself yet? Oh my God. Crowdcast is just the ghetto. Alright,
how am I gonna figure this out?
I guess I'll just have to take you off screen for now. We're almost done, so we'll just do that for now. I don't know what the fuck happened. Try opening it in a different browser, but in the background, because in case this happens again and we need to fix this. Anyway, but yes, John. Fucking yes. That is. Yeah.
Because they put these premises out there and didn't want to argue you down.
Because
like,
then the solution has to fit everything. And when people go, well, I have some questions about this. And, you know, it's like in Medicare for all, where people go, well, I actually have really good insurance. Why would I want to give that up? And then it's like, oh, you piece of shit. Oh, it's like, well, wait, isn't the whole thing you won't get insurance? Like, you won't, like, I, like, explain to me what exactly this means for me. I can't have questions about, like, I need this my insurance pays for a certain type of care for my disabled daughter, and if I don't fucking have this, our quality of life is going to be actually not improved from this,
right?
And there's no way to work that into the bill where I can keep that, blah blah blah. It's that type of shit, and you're like, oh, this is just about picking sides. To make matters worse, activists have achieved almost rock star celebrity status in the world of organizing. Yes. So everyone picks their faves and insists that everything they say must be true. So you end up with people who agree on 90% of the terrain, attacking each other based on the team people they chosen. Yes. I'm definitely moving towards abolition in general, but given the history of white people perpetrating violence against marginalized groups, I have a tough time imagining a world with no police. I just don't trust my fellow white people enough for a kumbaya dream. Me neither. Anyways, thanks for letting me vent. P.S. Vernon and Corey are as great on the podcast as they are on stage. What a hilarious episode. Cheers. Stay safe, John. Thanks, John.
Thank you. Yeah, because I know we got to wrap up, but like my biggest thing is, the KKK ain't died. I hope people don't understand that. And there are some white people going, oh, no police, and they will fucking come out in numbers, and you and your community organizers, are you going to be able to protect me? If not, not tell me funny. From my perspective, what the fuck are we talking about?
Yeah, that, I mean, like I said, it's very valid. And I don't believe, and this could just be, look, I'm a black man. I understand my imagination and stuff is limited by that, those experiences. And so maybe, you know, on some level, I am going to always be not as pushing and seeing beyond the boundaries in the way that would make people feel like I was the most radical, coolest guy in the world. I may never get there, but I can't see it for some of this shit, because I'm just like, I can't even envision a world where white people leave us the fuck alone.
Right.
And we need some type of force against that. The guns are already in our society, and they got them.
Yes,
you know what
do.
I mean. So, you know, I can't imagine a world where there's no rapist. I can't imagine a world where there's no pedophiles. I can't imagine a world where we just talk to them and they figure it out and go, I'm gonna stop molesting kids or whatever the fuck because y'all said I'm responsible to the community. I can't even imagine a world where just the investment in all these social services means there is zero crime or zero people that abuse people and stuff. So it's just hard for me to imagine. I will keep reading, I'll keep educating myself, and I'm gonna try to lean towards the empathy and the stuff that I already have in me, but it's a limit to all this shit. I'm not infinitely forgiving. I'm not infinitely empathetic. There's, you know, I don't be feeling nothing when I see R. Kelly in prison. I don't feel nothing when I see Dylan Roof go to, if he gets the chair. It don't bother me at all. Like, I sleep good at night. It's not like, there's no part of me that feels like, kind of like complicated about that kind of shit. So maybe I'm just not as woke or as liberal as some of these motherfuckers, but some of this shit is like what needs to happen, in my opinion. So I don't know. Monica writes in, hi Rod and Karen, I hope you get this email in time for the feedback show. I develop a terrible habit of saving your show to the end of the week. Then on Friday, I'm scrambling to listen to everything and staying up late to comment on the website and leave feedback. Well, this time I'm really up against the clock. Yeah, you was trying to turn in the exam at the end of the, like, the class started. This episode with the gentleman from Living Color was so excellent, better than I could have hoped for, and I was really anticipating it. It was too cool to hear these legendary musicians totally geek out over the segments and be so enthusiastic about sharing their thoughts with y'all. Yeah, you know, they were so excited. Corey didn't even get in on us for our terrible singing. He let us slide one day.
Did he though?
I was ready. Normally, yeah, he'd be like, this is horrible. Y'all should just let me sing this shit.
And I was like, you know what? We'd be more than happy to. I told him, we are terrible singers. I was mm-hmm. like, you ain't got to lie. He was trying to be nice about it. I'm like, right. You ain't got to lie. We know we're not professional singers.
Mm-hmm. So many funny moments. I already knew Corey's level of enthusiasm from the previous show, so listening to Vernon be just as loud and joyful was a treat. The episode touched on all the worst things going on in the world, and yet there was an intense feeling of joy and community. Excellent. Mm-hmm. Ain't we lucky we got him? I'm a big fan of Vernon Reed on Twitter. Yes, Vernon be going in on Twitter, very thoughtful. Love all his thoughts on music and more. I also have much appreciated his pandemic postcard project. He let me see my city again while I've been holed up in the apartment for 3 months. I suggest people check out his Instagram. I don't know if I'm his Instagram friend. I gotta check to see if I am.
I don't know. I have to go check too.
Shame on me for waiting too long to comment, but now I'm cramming. But believe me, the other episodes this week have been fantastic to me too. Lastly, Rod, you were totally hilarious on Silent Trailers, the Keith and the Girl game show. Thank you. It was fun to see that. And Karen, you were so adorable and funny on Drunk Black History last night.
Aww.
It was such a joy to see you both there, as well as comedians I love, like Ray, Shalewa, Gordon, Brandon, and Chris. Also, so nice to see the Blackout Tips family there. Hi, Nick Jew. Hi, Brooklyn Shoe Babe. Hi, Tanya. Yes, I saw all the crew was up in there.
They're rolling deep.
Okay. One day I'll go to a live show and be less shy in person than I am online. Love to the whole the Blackout Tips universe. Mwah. Monica, aka Monty Cass. Thank you. And just, yeah, that's all the feedback. We barely made it in. Boom. So we got a roll. We got another. We're gonna be guest on a podcast. So thank you so much, everyone, for listening. Mm-hmm. Tomorrow's Father's Day, so that means my dad will be on the show with us remotely. So that we're looking forward to that.
Still social distancing.
Yeah, and then if everything goes well this week, I believe on Tuesday we should have Jamel Hill on the show again. So. Yay! Looking forward to that. So thank you guys for listening, and you know, we'll be back soon. Until then, peace, and I love you.
I love you too. Mwah.